This podcast is dedicated to my friend, Lance Amon, who was involved in a motorcycle accident last week. At the time of this recording, May 27th, 2017, we got the word on May 26th, 2017, that Lance died in the hospital. Lance had the courage and wit of a Clint Barton, also known as Hawkeye, and the strength yet sensitivity of Ben Grimm. Lance, you are an Avenger, sir. You are an Avenger. Please help my friend's family by donating any money that you can to this URL link, www.gofundme.com/Lance. A is in Apple, M is in Magic, A is in Apple, N is in Nancy, N is in Nancy. Once again, please donate any money you can from $1 to $100. Every little bit helps to www.gofundme.com/Lance. A is in Apple, M is in Magic, A is in Apple, N is in Nancy, N is in Nancy. That's Lance Amon. Lance, if there is a better place, if there is a higher plane of existence, I know you're there, my friend. I miss you, I love you, and I'm not alone. There are a lot of people that miss you. Love you, Uso. For those of you who don't know, Uso is Samoan for brother. I told that to Lance once. I love you, Lance. Goodbye, my friend.
When Captain America throws his mighty shield,
the TV fans are taking over. This is Across the Airwaves.
You're different. Now, don't let anyone tell you that you have nothing to offer. Second chances don't come around all that often. I suggest you take a really close look at it.
Welcome to ATA Presents the Marvelverse Podcast. And sadly, there is no Nikki Amy, there is no Steve Nostro, and there is no James Hapel. I am a Marvelverse Fantastic Four that's just a one. But I have a smartphone, and I looked through the Avengers Rolodex of podcasters that I could find, and one person was very gracious to accept the invitation to be on today's Marvelverse Podcast. He is from the Steady Stream, a new podcast that just started. Go find it on Google Play and on iTunes, and he is a personal friend of mine, Mr. Steven Brogan. How's it going?
Everything's going pretty well, Woo. Thanks for having me, man.
Thank you for accepting. So, we're gonna go through some topics. First of all, the news. First of all, it's news outside the Marvel Cinematic Universe. We have some news about the New Mutants, aka X-Force, and apparently this new X-Men franchise is going to be more of a horror genre film, mixed with a John Hughes, like, Breakfast Club aspect to it. And this is according to my friends over at Screen Junkies News. What did you think about when you first read this, sir?
I don't know, man. It's honestly, I need to do more research on this, but the way you're describing it, man, I am stoked for it. I'm a good old-fashioned fanboy when it comes to this kind of stuff. I don't care if it's good or bad. You're talking to the guy who enjoyed the Green Lantern movie. So anything coming out new for me to just indulge on, I am excited for, man.
What we have also heard related to this project is Claire Temple, Rosario Dawson, is in talks to be in this film. Also, it's almost been I need to look over this again, that Henry Zaga, I hope I'm saying that right, is going to star in this new X-Men film. The thing, I love Rosario Dawson, and I don't think just because she's in the Marvel TV universe that this is going to stop her from being in another film franchise. My thing with Henry Zaga is this. I hope that he's playing a villain, because much like Javier Bardem, I can never see this guy and say, yeah, that's a good guy. I don't know what it is. Maybe it's the way his eyes are set. He always just looks like he's got something up. He still looks like such a bad. You know what
some
I mean?
Some guys have that look. They can't help it. It's a type.
Yeah. I mean, come on. Do you want to see Javier Bardem in a family movie where he's a single dad? Do you think anybody would buy that?
I mean, Ghost Drive Off off your type, but no, he just looks so good. He's a great looking bad guy, though.
Oh, I'm sorry. I need to amend what I just said earlier. It is not like the X-Men series. This new film franchise that's a spinoff of X-Men is going to be called New Mutants. Bigger part. I really like the concept of this just on paper. The one thing that I really have a hard time getting around is because it's so new. I mean, both DC and Marvel has tried to do horror flavor within like the superhero genre, and there's been talks about it, but no one has ever actually got it off the ground. So I'm just a little, I don't know if hesitant's the right word, but I'm just a little, you know, I'm just kind of meh about the whole thing just because it's so new. You understand what I mean?
Yeah, you're just waiting to see what happens. You're steadfast right now.
Yeah, and honestly, it looks good on paper. Horror and X-Men have kind of like been interrelated before, and again, I was a guy that did not like the idea of doing an X-Men First Class film, and now I think X-Men First Class is one of the best X-Men films ever made. Like I said, and I need to reiterate this one more time, it's not that I'm not looking forward to this, it's just because it's so new that I don't know what to think about this yet. But,
I mean,
go on.
Oh, I'm sorry, man, go ahead,
go ahead. Go on.
Well, I was just gonna say that thanks to Deadpool, we're allowed to now, well, it's allowed for us to now get these types of movies that aren't too afraid to push the envelope, because comic books aren't these graphic novel that are just aimed for children. They're intense. They can get really intense and touch upon some really dark and scary subjects. And I don't think you can do justice to any source material if you have to downplay it to fit a rating system.
Yeah. But, and I said this on my podcast last week, our Marvelverse podcast last week. I think it would be really interesting for Deadpool in a PG-13 setting if he's going to be in this New Mutants to point out the fact that he's being bleeped every time he says a profane word, and he can break the fourth wall in doing that. I think because there's, you can do those things with Deadpool that you really couldn't do with Iron Man or Spider-Man or Daredevil. Like,
oh yeah,
that's where the comedy comes from. But speaking of Deadpool, I really do think that we will see him in this franchise, because X-Force and New Mutants is kind of like hand in hand, and that's where you originally got started off. But speaking of Deadpool, I need to scroll up here for a second. Deadpool 2 has just announced actor Jack Kessie as a major villain in Deadpool 2. The actor is from The Strain, and most likely he's going to play Tom Cassidy. Now, I'm not too familiar with Deadpool or The Strain. Do you know this actor, sir?
I'm checking up right now. Who were we looking at again? Who was the actor?
The actor's name is Jack K-E-S-Y. That's his last name.
Jack Kessie, I see him.
I've never watched The Strain, so I don't really know him.
He was in Baywatch. He's in The Strain. I mean, his credits seem pretty legit.
Yeah.
And here's the thing. I think what Deadpool also did was force Marvel Studios to look at themselves and be like, yeah, you can take a chance. It's okay. Take chances. Make mistakes if you need to. But trust the source material. Trust that we got this.
Yeah. But here's the thing going to Deadpool 2. I said it for the first Deadpool film that came out a couple years ago. Deadpool is the meal in and of itself in terms of you don't really need to put him in physical danger. He's not Iron Man. He's not Daredevil in the sense of you don't really need a marquee villain or even a big villain to make his story interesting. He's what makes his story interesting. So not that I'm like pushing this like casting news away, but I'm not really familiar with Deadpool in the comics. He was my favorite. I think he's a little overrated at times, but I understand why he's so popular. But I really don't have a dog in this race just because I like the first Deadpool movie. I'm pretty sure that I'm gonna like the second one. And Ryan Reynolds, this is his passion project, and he's not gonna let the sequel to Deadpool be a stain on him.
Totally. And I mean, you have with having a character like Deadpool, and I'm also not too well informed with the Deadpool mythos, but what I have seen, there's some ridiculous things that go on in that universe, in the Deadpool world. Well, Deadpool kind of fall. He's fallen into almost every major storyline when it comes to the Marvel universe.
Well, he has, and he's pretty much guest starred in everybody's books. And I love that when he guest stars in books, because no one is happy to see him. And I need to make this clear for all of you people, all of you fake geeks, and if you don't consider yourself a fake geek, this is not going to apply to you. Stop comparing or stop saying Spider-Man ripped off Deadpool.
What?
That said,
that's something that's been said, that's being said.
I've seen it on many YouTube reaction videos, and I have to say this. Spider-Man was inspired by the creator of Deadpool, was a Spider-Man fan for a long time. That's why his costume, Deadpool's costume, is the same color scheme almost as Spider-Man's. That's where the expressive eyes came from. And I will keep saying this to any non-pretend to be and try to say that Spider-Man ripped off Deadpool. But here's, going back to Deadpool in the comics, he really is like the next door neighbor no one wants to talk to. And I've said this one on the show before. He guest starred in a Daredevil comic. I can't remember what number it was, but he was teaming up with Daredevil. Deadpool. Daredevil rolls his eyes at him, and Deadpool just goes, "Why are you rolling your eyes at me? They don't even work." I spit out my drink when I heard that line. That was the most sarcastic, like, a-hole thing to say. That is one of my favorite lines in comics history. That has nothing to do with story. But going along to Spider-Man and something outside of the Marvel Cinematic Universe, it's been confirmed that the Silver Sable / Black Cat movie has found a director at Sony Entertainment, and I'm looking for this director's name. Well, first of all, my opinions on these spin-offs of Spider-Man that don't necessarily have Spider-Man in them are very interesting. I do love the casting and the idea of Tom Hardy being in a Venom movie. I really like that concept because I think Tom Hardy is one of the best performers working today in cinema. I love the idea of him being in a Venom movie, but do I like the idea of there being a Venom movie without having Spider-Man there? I'm not happy about that necessarily. But going back to Black Cat and Silver Sable, I don't know. And I'm looking for the director's name here. She actually worked on the pilot episode that we haven't seen yet of the Marvel television show Cloak and Dagger that looks really cool. Mm. Oh, the name is Bryce Blethwood, who directed the pilot for, like I said, for Cloak and Dagger. He's going to be the director for this film. Here's my go on.
No, right on. No, I was gonna fanboy like crazy though when you did mention the Venom movie.
Yes.
That's you said everything I was thinking. No, I'm just so I'm really stoked that Tom Hardy isn't only gonna be Venom in a film, but he's gonna be Venom in a Venom film.
Yes.
Like, it isn't Venom, you know, starring alongside Spider-Man or, you know, in a Spider-Man. This is a Venom movie. And I think Venom as a character, because that's the thing I love. And I told you this before, man, when it comes to villains, like pseudo-villains, if you were, because I think Venom's a pseudo-villain.
Yeah. They made him a kind of an anti-hero.
But what made him the anti-hero was that duality between Eddie and Venom, that there are two of the same kind, but there's two separate entities living in one body, kind of like the Hulk, where the symbiote has its own self-awareness. It's its own entity. Yeah. And that's what makes it so enthralling. And I bet they're going to do the whole kind of like Deadpool, where Deadpool is the anti-hero or anti-villain, whatever, not the pseudo-villain, if you will, that what's going to get Eddie, because I remember this from the Spider-Man animated series, the one from the 90s, the really awesome one,
yeah,
that he had that woman he was in love with, the doctor who was helping him with the symbiote and how to live with it or how to get better.
Dr. Ashley Kafka, for those who are trying to remember her name, who they made into a man in Amazing Spider-Man 2, which made
really?
Yeah. They had a Dr. Kafka at Ravencroft's like psychiatric ward, and they turned Dr. Kafka into a man. But here's the funny thing, with all this talk of diversity and gender equality, no geek like mentioned that in any review that I just found that really funny. But go on.
Thank God for you. You're like a encyclopedia of this. You're so good to have around, man.
Oh no. I'm good. I'm not as great as some of my other friends, like Paul Herman, like Sean Gerber, like Michael Bailey, who can tell you pretty much anything just by by naming you, but you were saying...
But I was just saying that I think that's what's going to make Venom into a more beloved character, is seeing that duality in play, seeing Eddie's love for that doctor, if that's what they go with, Eddie's love for that, for her, making him grow a conscience while being Venom.
Yeah, but...
Go on.
I'll let you finish.
Well, I told you before, with Thanos, I just love the idea of a villain who is driven by love, or driven by a positive force. It gets me all the time. Sorry. So yeah, go ahead, bud. Go ahead.
No. Well, here's what I think that's really interesting that my friend over at the YouTube channel Superhero News, Sean Gerber, brought up on his show. I do find it kind of interesting that Tom Hardy's playing the most disliked villain in 90s supervillains in Bane and Venom. Because that's the thing, Venom and Bane both have a very much like a cult of personality thing behind them, and I just find it really interesting that Tom Hardy is going to have the opportunity to play both. But going back to Black Cat and Silver Sable, much like the Venom movie, I don't like the idea of there being Spider-Man spinoffs without Spider-Man in either of them. And I understand what Sony Entertainment, they lost the rights to James Bond. James Bond, for all we know, is still up for grabs. It has not been confirmed yet what studio has James Bond. The only film franchise that Sony, actually two, including Spider-Man, the only other film franchise Sony has the rights to that has made them a considerable amount of money is the Jump franchise. I understand why Sony wants to make some money off of these properties, even without the help of Marvel Studios.
Which rights do they have still?
They still have the rights to Spider-Man. They're just lending out Spider-Man to the MCU. And we'll get into the rights a little bit later for those who don't know the story behind the rights, but going back to Black Cat and Silver Sable, I like these two characters. I love them both in the 90s animated series that Stephen Brogan just mentioned. I like both characters, but here's the thing, and some may get this reference and some may not. It really does feel like, and I don't mean to laugh, I'm sorry, when I first heard that this was announced, this really was like Spider-Man Birds of Prey. And for those of you who don't know what Birds of Prey was, it was an early 2000 all-female cast about a now crippled Barbara Gordon helping Helena Kyle, the daughter of Bruce Wayne and Selena Kyle, and the daughter of Black Canary. And it was all centered around them trying to save Gotham or help Gotham because Bruce Wayne moved away. And I feel the same way with Black Cat and Silver Sable. It's like, okay, there is no Spider-Man, but let's try to make a story out with these two characters. And before I let Brogan put his two cents in, here's my idea for the actors or the actresses that they should cast. For Silver Sable, Charlize Theron. And I know this is not going to be popular, but I think she can make it work, especially since they don't necessarily have to have somebody Tom Holland's age, because as far as we know, a version of Spider-Man will not be in either Venom or Black Cat and Silver Sable. I want to cast Mary Elizabeth Winstead as Black Cat.
Okay.
What are your thoughts on this film?
I think it's a big risk having a movie starring two characters that a lot of people aren't well versed on, that they don't know much about, without having them pop up at least in, say, Spider-Man Homecoming, or have just coming out of nowhere. It's gonna be a little weird. I mean, Marvel did take a chance with Guardians of the Galaxy because the Guardians weren't well known either. Me included. I did not know a lot about the Guardians.
But here's the thing about Guardians of the Galaxy. It rode the wave that Marvel Studios had already created for itself. So
fair. It was a part of the formula still. Yeah. Is that what you're saying? Yeah.
Or no. Like in the marketing for Guardians of the Galaxy, it said from the studio that brought you Iron Man and Thor and the Avengers comes Guardians of the Galaxy. So people who didn't know anything about the Guardians knew that, oh, this is the same people that did the Avengers. So let's take a chance on this. But
so if you have Black Cat and Silver Sable, it's going to be like from the studios that brought you Spider-Man 1, 2, 3, and Amazing Spider-Man 1 and 2. Consistency is a new series of films.
Yes, and luckily enough, they don't have to follow any sort of continuity, but it's different with Venom per se, because Venom, like Brogan just said, has a fan following all its own. People know who Venom is, even if they've never even read a Spider-Man comic book. But with Black Cat and Silver Sable, they're so connected with with Spider-Man, specifically with Black Cat, aka Felicia Hardy. I don't necessarily see how they can do this film without any kind of references to the past. I mean, I know this is a Marvel show, and I'm not going to mention to you that much, but it's pretty much like Halle Berry Catwoman. Before we ever even saw the movie, it was like, how do you do Catwoman without any kind of mention of Bruce Wayne? And oh, by the way, it's not Selena Kyle.
Yeah.
I mean, it's... Oh, go on.
I mean, I told you before, I said before, I do love any film that's trying to do an adaptation of a comic series or, you know, of anything from that genre, but man, I can't seem to really be on board with Catwoman. I love Green Lantern because I love Ryan Reynolds, and Green Lantern's one of my favorites, but oh man, Catwoman was a disaster.
Yeah.
It's like the person who wrote it didn't even know the comics at all.
And that's why I'm worried that the people that they're going to get involved with this, they know comics, but they don't know this particular comic character and this particular character's backstory and this, that, and the other. But I need to say this before we go into our next news item. I was not like interested in a Venom movie without Spider-Man at all before Tom Hardy. Now that Tom Hardy is cast, and now that we have a director who has been up for several other like superhero movies and not gotten it, I'm more on board with Venom than I was. But and I hope to be proven wrong, both with Venom and Black Cat and Silver Sable. But we need to move on to some news that just broke 5 minutes before we started recording. Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 has just exceeded their worldwide box office, the domestic and worldwide box office of Guardians of the Galaxy 1.
It's number one right now?
No, it's exceeded its box office of the first Guardians.
Oh, no way. That's awesome.
Yes, it is indeed awesome. Not unexpected, may I add. I was kind of expecting that it would do this.
And that's awesome because the recurring theme that keeps coming up when it comes to Guardians of the Galaxy's Volume 2 is the same stigma that every sequel gets, and it's, is it better than the first? It's not better than the original. It's not as good. Da 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 da. Whatever, so on and so forth. But I feel like that is such a cynical and unfair way to think about to look at a sequel.
But it's a very understandable one because people always go to that.
Fair enough. But I personally don't want to see the same thing twice.
Neither do I.
I want to see something new. Something I don't want to see the formula. The cookie cutter sequence and be like, okay, first act, second act, third act. I know how you work now. I like twists. I like something new, something different. And Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2, we talked about this before. The pacing was different. It was a lot slower, a lot more grounded, but it didn't lose its heart. It didn't lose its core. It was still the Guardians.
Yes.
Because I honestly, Age of Ultron, Avengers Age of Ultron was supposed to be the sequel to the Avengers, you know? And honestly, it felt like a filler movie. It almost felt exactly the same as the first.
I can see that point. I don't necessarily agree, but I can see that point.
It had its twists and turns, like the Vision coming out of nowhere. Like that blew my mind away. But we kind of had that same thing where we have the team coming together or whatnot. We find out who our villain is. We see the whole interaction between the heroes and the villain. And then in the third act, during the final battle, we have our grouping all kicking butt. The camera panning around the entire group,
which was awesome. Like
it's cool and it's amazing. And I even Guardians Volume 2 did that too. Did you see that?
Yeah, I did.
It's like the superhero landing that Deadpool points out. It's those things that you're just like, oh, I want it. But yeah, Guardians Volume 2. Oh man, it holds a special place in my heart because it definitely had me thinking more and feeling a lot more than the first one did. And that's only because of what the first one laid the foundation it laid out.
And we've talked about this on your show, the Steady Stream podcast, and on the Marvelverse podcast. I understand why people weren't as hyped about Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 as they were about the first one. But I think people have to look at it like this. Like, you can't just judge something by just one time unless it was very traumatic, which I don't think... That's the one word that I've not seen anybody talk about with Guardians Volume 2, is traumatic. I think with Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 and Age of Ultron, I would say, and Captain America the First Avenger, like, these films were not critically acclaimed when they came out necessarily. They weren't the biggest box office draws. Well, Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 and Age of Ultron made a lot of it. But my point is that they really weren't as well received by fans as much as their predecessors were. And even Captain America, Thor, I think, was more well received critically than Captain America: The First Avenger. But as time goes on, Age of Ultron, Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2, Ant-Man, Thor, Captain America: The First Avenger, I think they will be more beloved over time. Okay, our only topic today. Sorry, I sound a little confused, guys, because this is a whole new format for me. And the reason I'm laughing a little bit is literally like the wrestling move, the RKO. These trailers came out of nowhere, and this is the main reason why we're talking today. The third international and the third domestic. I hate that word because it makes the United States sound more important than it actually is. The third trailers for Spider-Man Homecoming came out, I want to say, Tuesday or Wednesday night. Literally was about to go to bed, and I got a notification on my phone that the trailers dropped, and I looked at the clock, it's like, it's almost midnight West Coast time. It's really baffling to me, because I never post. I don't want to say never. I almost never post news or any trailers like that late at night, because I just really don't like to, because I post to a lot of people. Well, let's talk about the domestic trailer first. What did you think of the domestic trailer of Spider-Man Homecoming, third trailer?
I love how innocent and how, and I'm saying this in a very positive way, juvenile it seems, very childlike with the use of Spider-Man self-taping himself.
Oh no, that's the international trailer, sir.
Oh shoot, which was the domestic one?
The domestic one was the use of the pop music and him like just saving people around town. If you want to talk about the international one, we can do that one first.
Sorry, I just watch things. I don't read much. Okay. Stay in school, kids. Okay. Which one was the domestic one? Did I watch it?
I'll help you with the international one. You were saying about the international one, though, with himself recording himself.
Oh, I just thought I liked how it captured the essence of Peter Parker and Spider-Man, and how we saw a lot of Spider-Man. Something just hit me. We saw a lot of Spider-Man. We saw a little bit of Peter, but we saw Peter as Spider-Man still, because we see him being found by his friend in his room, figuring out who he is.
Yeah, we saw that in the second trailer.
We see him with Tony, which we've seen the entire since the first trailer, with Tony, speaking of the Avengers, speaking of what happened and what's his status as an Avenger or whatever. But we haven't seen him just as Peter Parker, and if anything, that's what I'm more interested in. These trailers so far have shown a lot of action sequences. They've shown a lot of scenes with Vulture and Spider-Man fighting, and all these crazy, insane things that Spider-Man's doing, like holding that ship together. Insane stuff.
Yeah.
But what I am more curious about is I need to see Peter Parker, because so far in my heart, and people can fight me on this if they want, but in my heart of hearts, Tobey Maguire is my true Peter Parker.
And if I was able to do a thumbs down and a fart noise to add to this podcast, I would.
And look, I'll tell you why. Peter Parker is supposed to not be like Spider-Man. Spider-Man is, he's brave and bold and witty, and you know, he has these really awesome one-liners. But as Peter Parker, he's this awkward, nerdy kid. That's the essence of Peter Parker. Well, in my eyes, at least. Well, and I think. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
No. You go, and then I'll back clean up.
Okay. But I think Tobey Maguire captured that essence. Now, was he perfect? No. Was that his fault as an actor? No. That was probably the production, like the screenwriters or whatever. Because why the hell is Peter going emo? I can understand why he went emo in the third movie, because the symbiote kind of brings out the negative emotions in you.
No, but the symbiote makes you angry and testy and, you know, not a nice person to be with. It does not make you into a D-bag.
But well, and that was not, and see, I don't think that was Toby's fault. That was the misuse of the source material by the writers. They didn't understand what the symbiote was supposed to do.
I don't even think it was that. I think it was a situation of, okay, we want to come up with something funny. We want to kill something that's going to make people laugh. So let's just throw this in there, and let's see if it like makes people laugh. And I guarantee you, on the set of Spider-Man 3, I'll bet anyone $10 of this. If Sam Raimi goes on an interview and says that dancing scene in Spider-Man 3, and we all know what scene we're talking about. It was funny on the set, but beyond that one time, it's like one of those jokes where it's funny that time, but as time goes on, it just becomes less funny and then eventually not.
I can only imagine that scene was a joke told in the writing room, and at the end of it, the writer who brought up that joke was like, holy crap, they actually did it?
Yeah.
It was a joke?
Yeah, and I think it's gotta be one of those situations, but for me, and we're gonna go back to these trailers in a sec, but for me, and this is my just stance on it, first of all, even at, like, how old was I in 2002? I was...
Wow.
16. I was 16 at the time? Yes, I was 16. Even at 16, I could tell, Tobey Maguire, you are not a high school student. You are
no.
You are anything but a high school student. That's number one. Number two, Spider-Man 1, outside of visual effects, has probably the worst dialogue in any superhero movie I've ever seen in my life. Even X-Men Apocalypse had more compelling, you know, dialogue than Spider-Man 1. And who wrote Spider-Man's one-liners? You're the one who's out, Gabby. Out of your mind. I'm sorry, you're 16 years old. You live in New York City. You couldn't think of more witty one-liners than that.
Yeah.
And here's the thing about I'm sorry, Tobey Maguire. If he wasn't first, people would not regard him as much as they do.
No.
I'm not saying people who love those movies are dumb. I'm not saying that. I'm not saying you shouldn't like those movies. I'm not saying that you like what you like. My opinion should not stop from liking what you like. I'm just saying I don't see the fascination with the 2002 Spider-Man or I don't know anybody who likes Spider-Man 3. I will say this though, Spider-Man 2, one of the best written and one of the best superhero movies I've ever seen in my life.
Agreed.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. I think Spider-Man 3... Oh, but speaking of Spider-Man 1, I think something was in the water, because when was X-Men 1 made?
That was late 1999.
Oh, no. It was 2000.
It was released in 2000, but it was made in...
There you go, Wu. Thank you for keeping me in check. That's why I keep you around, Wu.
Yes.
I thought it was my
charming personality and my obvious good looks.
Well, that's just the cherry on top, buddy.
Oh, yeah, it is.
But cherry. I think something was definitely in the water, because X-Men 1 was terrible. I don't know who edited that movie, but it was nauseating.
Well, here's the... And I'm sorry to go off on a tangent on this, but it happens on podcasts. If you don't know, if you haven't listened to many podcasts, everybody goes on tangents once in a while. Here's the thing about X-Men, the first X-Men. Lauren Shuler Donner, who is the wife of Richard Donner. Yes, that Richard Donner who did The Omen, the first couple Lethal Weapon movies, and a little movie called Superman the Movie. She actually directed this movie. And you have to remember that the first X-Men film was done for a super small budget.
Mm.
And to get what they actually got, that was amazing, but no pun intended. But to go back to these trailers, the international trailer did a good job of setting up why Michael Keaton's Vulture was doing what he was doing. I thought it did a really good job. And it also set up, like, you know, the struggle that Spider-Man's gonna have in this particular film, Spider-Man Homecoming. Just for reference, Tom Holland actually did that flip over
what?
The bed. That was actually him.
He wasn't wearing a wire or a harness?
No, because and I don't know if you realize this because not a lot of people do. He actually came from British theater. Like, he can actually do some pretty acrobatic stuff. That's one of the reasons why they casted him. So that wasn't CG. That wasn't, you know, anything like added to it. Of course he had to do a couple takes, but that was all him doing over the bed.
Holy crap, he's Peter Parker.
Yeah. Going to the domestic trailer, though, and I'm going to help Brogan out because I don't think he's seen the third domestic trailer. I did like the whole, like Brogan said, the kid high school aspect of it. I loved Ned Leeds saying to Peter, we have a Spanish quiz, after Peter said, this is my chance to prove myself. I love that Peter has this AI in his suit similar to Friday in Iron Man, or with Iron Man. Until the AI actually gets a name. I'm gonna call this AI Saturday, or Marvis. Not Jarvis, but Marvis. I love that. It's showing Peter much more as his own character, not as Iron Man's sidekick. But one thing I wanted to do before wrapping this up is I wanted to ask this question:
sure.
Did you think these trailers show too much of the story?
Yeah, I think it pretty much. You mentioned before how the international trailer explained why Vulture is doing what he's doing. So now we know, so that kind of takes away from the whole thing. We assume that Spider-Man's going to overcome him. We assume that.
Yeah.
I can already tell from the trailers that Tony at one point is going to take the suit away from Peter because he thinks he's not ready yet, but then he's obviously going to have to prove himself by fighting Vulture by himself without the suit, just his original homemade suit.
Yes.
And that'll be his moment to prove himself to Tony and to himself. I think they laid it all out for us, and there better be some, I don't know, I think all we have to look forward to when it comes to surprises is the end credit scene.
Well, here's the thing about trailers, and shout out to my friends again at Super News for pointing this out, and maybe some YouTube reactors that I'm not thinking about their names, or I'm not remembering their names right off the top of my head. A lot of the times in trailers, we see a lot of the first act in these trailers, but not so much the second and third act, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I'm thinking that the majority of what we're seeing in these trailers are the first act of the movie. And anyway, people usually don't like, you know, the first act of movies anyways, typically, especially for a relaunch of a franchise, because they've seen these beats before, so they don't necessarily need to see them again. And I think that people are saying they're showing too much in these trailers. Well, because number one, like I was saying earlier, Sony has the distribution rights to Spider-Man, and when you have the distribution rights for a movie, you control the marketing and how this movie is going to be advertised. They do not have this power when Spider-Man is in the Avengers.
Mm.
So I think if Marvel Studios had full control of the distribution as well, you wouldn't see all this in the trailers. But with that said, this is the third relaunch of a character that almost everybody knows about. You need to show audiences, specifically international audiences, and I have to give credit to the comic book cast for this one, their YouTube channel. They mentioned that a lot of international audiences don't even realize that this movie is taking place in the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Right, so that's why they need to show more of Tony Stark
in
the movie.
Yes, and that is why it's being done. I don't think this is gonna hurt the box office for Spider-Man Homecoming, because the only people that I see that have a problem with this are the hardcore geeks like you and I.
Yeah.
Like, the people that don't know, that generally are the reason that these Marvel Cinematic Universe movies make $1 billion, are the people that know nothing about continuity or who's in what or who has the rights to what. They just want to go see a good...
Yeah, and Marvel, I guess they're smart about that. They're tending to those audience members too.
Maybe even more than they should, the hardcore geek. But it's... And you're going to love this reference, and we're going to wrap this up in a few minutes. But the creator of Monday Night Football, a gentleman by the name of Don Allmeyer, said, you know, in no uncertain terms, screw the football fan, because the football fan is going to show up because it's football. We need to cater to the people that have never seen a football game on TV in their life. This was back in the 1970s. And we need to draw an audience that would never watch football to watch football. And I think that's what Marvel Studios is doing here, to bring in the hardcore geeks, the hardcore comic book audience, but also cater to an audience that would never want to see a movie like this in their life.
It'll spark their curiosity too.
Yes, absolutely. Now let's roll that pre-recorded.
Canada Across the Airways Podcast Network website, acrosstheairways.com. Again, that's acrosstheairways.com. You can check out all of our podcast shows available as their own individual program in the iTunes Store, okay, Google Play Store. Guys, for the podcast shows, Color Network, we have the DC Nation podcast located at dcnation.acrosstheairways.com. Again, that's dcnation.acrosstheairways.com, which reviews popular DC Comics related TV shows and movies. There's also the Marvelverse podcast located at marvelversepodcast.acrosstheairways.com. Again, that's Marvelverse. Multiverse Podcast, .acrosstheairwaves.com, which reviews Marvel comic-related TV shows, Gun Moves. And we also have Thrones Cast, our podcast dedicated to reviewing episodes of HBO's Game of Thrones, which is available at the website thronescast.acrosstheairwaves.com. Again, that's thronescast.acrosstheairwaves.com. In addition to these programs, you can listen to the original Across the Airwaves podcast, which is accessible at acrosstheairwaves.com, which reviews TV shows not related to superheroes, core Game of Thrones, like The Walking Dead, Doctor Who, Star Wars Rebels, Supernatural, and more, including sitcoms such as The Big Bang Theory and The Muppets. Also, you can listen to Across the Airwaves, the DC Nation podcast, Thronescast, the Game of Thrones podcast, and the Marvelverse podcast on the Mixed Radio Station, code by Jack Knife, Stitcher Radio. Or if you use Apple devices, download the podcast box app. And if you're on a Windows or Android device, you can download our app from the Amazon Marketplace, and the Windows Marketplace, and a regular Windows or Windows Phone app. As for how you can contact us to give your own listener feedback on the TV shows we review, provide suggestions on how we can improve your podcast listening experience, or just want to say, do you like what we're doing? Email us at acrosstheairwaves@gmail.com. Again, that's acrosstheairwaves@gmail.com. Comment on our Facebook. Follow us on Twitter, @acrosstheairwaves. There's no thought. It's just Across the Airwaves. Join our circle, @Google+. Go leave us a voicemail by calling 773-809-336. Again, that's 773-809-336. Also, when sending us an email, please mention which podcast show you're directing the message to. Get the subject line. Give you are sending us listener feedback while we're on the air. I would also recommend that you check out our YouTube page, which features trailers for upcoming movies and television events. Along with this content, the ATA YouTube channel is a great source for panels from past Comic-Con, and it will be a great resource to find videos related to the Comic-Con taking place in San Diego this summer to go along with our Comic-Con special.
I understand you're on a tight schedule, sir. So do you have any social media you would like to share with our audience?
Well, name Stephen Brogan. You can search me up either on Instagram, Twitter. I got the SETI stream, as we mentioned before. You can find us on iTunes Podcast, Google Play Music. SETI stream, we just talk. Wu was on it, and we just geeked out like we are right now. Hit me up.
And don't worry, for those of you that only read the descriptions in Apple Podcasts or in Google Play, I will put the correct spelling of Stephen's name in the description so there won't be any confusion. I would like to thank Stephen Brogan for coming on the podcast today. Thanks, Stephen. And for all of our usual listeners, I don't know when Nikki, Steve, James, and myself are going to come back. I'm just going to say right now, most likely the next time you'll hear from us is around the week of June 6th or 7th, because that's when Spider-Man Homecoming is going to come out, and we will review the movie then. I don't know if we're going to come back early. So on behalf of my podcast partners, the people that keep the show running, Michael J. Petty, Nico Reifshek, for my podcast partners, Nikki Amy, Steve Nostro, James Hape, my name is Wes Kim, and thank you once again to Stephen Brogan. Thanks a lot. Excelsior!